This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right, welcome to the Chelsea Fancast, fueled by Guinness, powered by Celery, the show that never, ever, ever tires of watching an Arsenal meltdown. There really is nothing in football quite like beating those specialists in failure, Arsenal Football Club. If only for the complete meltdown by their nerdy fans afterwards. They now haven't even managed to score a goal against Chelsea in over 9.5 hours of football. That's 6 matches. Add to that, we've beaten them twice in our worst season for 30 years. Let's hope we've terminally damaged their title chances. That would be sweet, and some compensation for our trauma this season. I am Stamford Chidge, and the name of tonight's show is the Chelsea Football Fancast. Costa makes the lattes froth. Lovely. Now, I have with me, it's a bit of a weird show tonight for many reasons, and I will explain this all in a minute, but first of all, let me introduce who we've got. We've got the lovely Jonathan King.
Hello.
How are you, my friend?
Very good, thank you very much.
Lovely, good to hear you. We've also got the lovely Dan Silver.
Evening, mate, how you doing?
I'm very well, how are
very
you?
Good. Still on a high.
Lovely, good stuff. And I've also got, last but by no means least, I've got the legendary Chelsea journalist Dan Levine and all of the people in the Wetherspoons pub in Victoria.
Yay! It's an honour.
Yeah, well, who for us or for the people in Wetherspoons?
Oh, I think definitely for the people in Wetherspoons. It's quite special. I don't think anything special has ever happened in Wetherspoons in Victoria before.
Yeah, I have to be honest, Dan, you're not sounding too great, which has nothing to do with you. I think it's more to do with the Wi-Fi in the pub, but there we go. Onwards and upwards. Right, on the show tonight, we will be discussing why Arsenal are officially Chelsea's bitches and why their fans have ruined football. In part two, we'll be praising Costa and Fabregas and asking if they are well and truly back. And will this win and performance against Arsenal lead to a charge even up the table, or was it just that Arsenal are so pitiful? In part three, we'll be having a chat about the transfer rumour circulating on a daily basis around Chelsea, and we'll be asking who must go, who might go, and who should stay at Chelsea in the summer. And to wrap up, of course, in part four, we'll have the usual roundup of Chelsea supporters' news, plus an absolutely stonking email from a young lad I think he's from Philadelphia, actually. We've already got a Mixler person. Mr. Wilson's in the house. It's lovely to see Gary, who says, "Oh, Fabregas is magic, and Chidge will sing this song." You never know. I might do. I'll think about it. We've got Debs in the house, too. We've got Matt Jazz, Dazza. They're all coming in thick and fast. It's all good. Now, talking of Mixler, don't forget, people who listen to this as a podcast, you can listen to the show live every Monday at 7 o'clock by going to Mixler, which is Mixler, MIXLR.com/Chelsea-Fancast. where you can join in the chat by posting on the live chat page. And of course, you can also tweet at Chelsea Fancast during the show to tell us what you think about the games and anything else. On Chelsea, of course. Now, the more observant among you may have noticed that we sound slightly different this week. Well, that is because the Chelsea Fancast has gone virtual. By which I mean, sadly, because of the work commitments that I've got for the next 6 months, I can no longer be in London during the week, so we've had to resort to Skype to do the show. Now, the good news is that apparently it still works on Mixlr, because I tested it out yesterday, so we can do the show live. And yes, I am very well, very good, Jonathan. I don't have a stereo mic, so I'm coming in. I'm coming in your left ear, as the bishop said to the
matrons.
Matron. Ooh, matron. Yeah, so we're on Skype doing the show. The good news is that we know it works on Mixlr and we can do it live. The downside, of course, as you may be finding out, is the sound quality for both this and the podcast might be shit. But I can't help that. I mean, basically, it's either do it like this or no podcast for the rest of the season. So I think if you put it like that, you'll understand. Now, another bonus, of course, is that I might actually be able to respond to some of your questions on Mixlr during the show a bit better than I've done in the past, because I've actually got the computer in front of me and nothing to distract me. So keep posting, people. It's lovely to hear, actually, already, that people are saying that I'm coming through loud.
Which are you coming good. Through clear, though, Chidge?
Oh, yes, sorry. I'm coming through loud and clear, I think, is probably what they meant. Yes. You sound a lot better and we can understand you, says Gary, which is great. Sorry, Jonathan.
Than usual.
Yeah, something like that. Brighton Mike says, are you in a pub? Sadly, the only one of us that is in a pub is Dan Levine. Isn't that right, Dan Levine?
I'm in the pub.
Yeah, lovely stuff. All right, now, before further ado, we are going to play you a little sting. I'll tell you about this sting. The cheer that you will hear for this sting was actually recorded from when John Terry scored against Spurs in the Capital One Cup last year. You will love this, and then we'll talk about the Arsenal game. Talk about a lovely, wonderful experience on Sunday. Now, there's nothing, as I said in the build-up, there's nothing like quite beating the arse. Now, what I really want to talk about in this here part, really, is I can headline this simply by saying, same old Chelsea taking the piss. What do you think, Mr. Silver? Because you were there.
Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, it was just a brilliant away day. Fans were fantastic and great form. As normal, Arsenal moaning, looking for excuses. It was just it was a very, very good performance. You know, a lot of the media kind of shied away from how good Chelsea actually were and focused on, you know, Arsenal's inadequacies. But I think it was a really impressive, good professional 1-0. So I'm very happy.
Now, I'm good, glad to hear that. Now I know Mr. Levine is quite he likes his stats, and I'm not just talking about the triple of stats. But here's a few stats for you, Mr. Levine. Chelsea, since 2004, have beaten Arsenal 18 times, drawn 8, and lost 5. How about that for a stat?
That's not bad, is it, really? They're rubbish. I think the thing that did it for me was I tweeted yesterday, it was death, taxes, and Chelsea beating Arsenal. The three certainties in life. And we saw the third one again.
I mean, it was quite amazing, wasn't it? I mean, the other thing that really tickled my fancy was the fact that But Arsenal have not scored against Chelsea in the last 6 league games. That's over 9.5 hours of football, which is quite remarkable, Jonathan.
But it was remarkable considering that the defence was so dreadful against West Bromwich and Everton and put me into such a dreadful gloom, suspecting that we would be relegated at the end of the season. But if we play as well as this, I think a top four finish is really likely. And apparently we've... Of the last 7 games, we're second in the number of points scored. It just shows how, with what was it, 13, it just shows how average the whole of the division is, and how a top four spot is really really possible under Goose, who I think pulled it out of the bag against the Gooners in a way that I never suspected would happen. I think all the bad players really upped their game. I mean, Matic was just outstanding. The two great players, as was Mikel. So he's got this worked out that it does work having two defensive midfielders with John Obi and Matic. But of course, the great performances were from Fabregas, who was, particularly in the first half, was absolutely outstanding.
World-class
performance.
He's got a lot of space.
Indeed, there's the difference. Yeah. You have to wonder whether, in fact, it's because he doesn't get the space because we play against so many of the teams you just play, you know, park the bus and then break, which is what Arsenal were never going to do because they always want to try and impress with their football playing against us and beat.
Now, I've got another, because basically, you know, I think what I'm really leading up to say in this part is that, you know, Arsenal are officially Chelsea's bitches. But the interesting thing, I did a bit of research on this, as you know, Jonathan, because we talked about this yesterday. But basically, everybody seems to know that we've smacked their asses for the last 10 years. And frankly, we got ours smacked for most of the 90s, certainly. But how about this? You'll all love this, right? Between 1960 and 1970, Chelsea won 16, drew 2, lost 2 against Arsenal, which pound for pound is probably even better than we've done against them in the last 10 years. Jonathan, you were probably watching most of those.
I watched all of them, I suspect, and I can't remember any of them, Chidge, which is what I find quite rather desperate, actually, about aging. I don't remember them. I remember them thinking, oh, yeah, we're going to play Arsenal, we'll win easily. That's the kind of thought. You're absolutely right, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Dan Sills, what do you think of that? I mean, I was surprised when I read that. I've got to be honest.
Fantastic stat, and for a club with no history, it's even better. I mean,
we weren't even formed then, were we?
That's a phenomenal stat. I mean, yes, they you know, in the '90s they had the Indian signovers, but that if you put it, you know, over the period of 50 years, it's probably pretty much like for like.
Yeah, I mean, they it's really interesting, actually. You know, it's so weird. Alison Frowdy says, "So weird, Chidge in my left ear, JK Dan in my right."
Where's Dan the boot?
Well, I don't. I'm about to ask him.
Dan, what are you?
Yeah, I mean, Dan. Oh, very good, very good. I mean, it is interesting our history against Arsenal because, you know, it's been fairly even apart from clear periods of dominance by either side. I mean, when they had Herbert Chapman, they were caning us a lot, and they gave us a bit of a seeing to in the 80s when we were actually in the same division. But we've had periods of dominance over them too. It's quite fascinating, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. And I think if you look at the last few years, the years that we'll all remember best, that period in the 90s when they really did have us over a barrel, that was still really George Graham's Arsenal, wasn't it? And it's all turned around. It's Wenger that can't manage it. Wenger has a real problem with Chelsea.
Go on, Dan, sorry.
You just wonder where that's come from. He seems to be completely psychologically beaten by Chelsea as soon as he sees the blue shirt.
I mean, one of the things I was going to say, actually, was exactly that. I mean, clearly Arsenal, since 2004, have been indefatigably Chelsea's bitches, but I just really wonder how much of it is down to Wenger and the fact that, A, is he tactically clueless, and B, is he stubborn. At the end of the day, you know, Arsene Wenger is the difference between the two sides in many respects, isn't he?
He is. I mean, a lot of Wenger's issues related to 2004, the Invincibles. He lost the George Graham back four and he's had to have his own back four. He's only got one way of playing. He's very myopic and it's to the detriment. I mean, how long did it take him to sign Peter Cech? 6 years of saying, sign a keeper. And it took him 6 years to realise.
He still hasn't got a proper centre-half, of course. You know, Mertesacker is... All the fans think it's dreadful. Described to me by an Arsenal fan as playing with an iron lung.
The
other thing he hasn't got and the thing he doesn't want is a defensive midfielder. He doesn't believe in him, does he? And that was really their undoing at the Emirates, I thought.
Well, you think Flamini's a kind of defensive midfielder, but he spent most of the time surging into the penalty area, much to the detriment of the team.
I mean, he must have something, because to go that long for a top team to keep their coach, however much he's done for the club, is, you know, he must have a lot of nude somewhere, because, you know, 10 years with 2 FA Cups.
Nudes? Did you say nudes?
Yes, he's probably got, you know...
Send nudes!
Yeah. He's just... It's bizarre because we've been through how many managers in the same period? 6 managers in 10 years, is it? And we've. Yeah.
I mean, look, I'll tell you what, for me, the biggest indictment of how pitiful Arsenal are is that they can't even beat us in our worst season for nearly 13 years. Yeah. 30 years, even. I mean, if ever a team had a psychological hold, and it is a psychological hold, I think, if only a team had them over Arsenal, it's Chelsea, isn't it, Dan Levine?
Yes, yeah, definitely. And they just seem to be absent-minded, and as soon as they hit the pitch, they don't seem to know what they're doing, and they just seem entirely beaten from the off. Wenger's decisions were just baffling, really, in that game. And as you rightly say, the fans at the stadium were calling out on him. And people just don't... They are getting restless, and he surely is running out of time. As far as I'm concerned, he can stay there forever.
We want you to stay. We want you to stay, Arsene Wenger. We want you to stay. Sorry, Jonathan, I cut across.
No problem. I was in the Laguna end. I had a friend gave me a ticket and sat next to a Chelsea mate. We had to sit on our hands, obviously, when Costa scored and for the... And for the sending off. But even they were mystified, particularly by the Giroud substitution all around me. They're absolutely bemused with Wenger. And yet they then won't blame Wenger. They'll blame other things. They'll blame Costa Chelsea. Somehow. It's or fate or something. It doesn't. They won't actually analyse it properly and say that it's all it's down to bad management.
Yeah. I mean, I was when they called Giroud up, I was delighted because I thought, well, he's a big threat, and if we're going to sit back and defend deep, the pace is kind of counterproductive because they're not going to get past us if we're defending that deep. Yeah. As soon as he went off, I thought, you know what, that's a really good sign.
Yeah, I mean, actually, that's a really good segue because I really wanted to talk about this because I think the other thing that I mean, we'll talk about this a lot more in part two about how well I think Chelsea performed and how well I actually think we got it right. But I was almost more amused and intrigued by how awful their fans are. And I mean they really are. They've got to be. And I've been saying this for years. It's not just after Sunday. But they really are some of the worst fans in football. I mean, they are the Scousers of London. I mean, I don't know if any of you lot were on Twitter last night, but Cundy was winding them up to distraction for about 4 hours and then getting loads of tweets like... we're going to text or we're going to phone up TalkSport and get you sacked, which is really Scouse behaviour. Anyway, I mean, the conclusion for me of this, I think there's actually quite a serious point in this. And my theory, which I will share with you, is that actually, it's always Chelsea fans that are accused of ruining football. I actually think it's much, much the opposite. I actually think that Arsenal have ruined football. And pretty much since they've built that new Solar Stadium, what's happened is it's accelerated the gentrification of football because suddenly, 30,000 seats are open to people who wouldn't have gone to football before because they were too middle class, and they feel it's safe to go and it's nice to go. And that's the kind of typical Arsenal supporter, sterile culture, able to afford expensive seats, wear shirts over a hoodie, middle class nerds, obsessed with class and history, spreadsheets and net spend and social media and fan channels. They really are, in my opinion, the worst type of football fans, and they are ruining it. Discuss Dan Silver.
Yeah, totally. They're the epitome of what's bad about modern football. These guys who just turn up, have their dinner, and just they don't care. They don't get the ethos of what it is to be a football fan. You, myself, Dan, John, we've been there. We know what it's like in front of 6,000 home to Blackburn. Proper football, the real passion, the real love. These new football people, they don't get it. It's a hobby. It's a way of, probably getting a tax rebate through work. They don't get football. They don't get what it's like to win the Champions League, obviously, because they haven't.
I think a lot of them haven't played either. I think one of the advantages is they've played. You understand the nuances of it, but some of the demands for retribution from just simple tackles and ridiculous misunderstanding of the laws, even from where I was, is bewildering. Actually, that they don't know what's going on the pitch.
I mean, I know I sound terribly classist about this, and who am I to talk? Because I'm obviously quite posh, as is Jonathan, as are we all.
What?
I mean, we're all very middle class, and it's always intrigued me and amused me that even back in the dark you know, kind of Beirut days of Stamford Bridge and Chelsea that quite a lot of posh people would always go. But what I'm really getting at is that, you know, these are the kind of people that go to Arsenal and certainly have been since they built the Emirates, and the kind of fans that have utterly, I think, single-handedly ruined their fan base are the kind of people who never, ever would have considered going to football. But certainly, I'd say, before 2000, probably way before that. I mean, Dan Levine, what do you think of my sociological theory?
First of all, great rant, Chidge. I did enjoy that. It was very good. There are a few things I think you missed out. One of them was the ridiculous Barber's Pole red and white striped scarves that are about as wide as a carriageway of the M1 that they'll wear around their necks. What is that?
Yeah.
And the other one is, can I also, if you Highbury Corner, you know, the whole culture around a shop that sells posh pies that is ingrained into the club. Give me a break.
I know, it's shithousery of the worst kind, and none of it has anything to do with football, does it? I mean, these fan channels, I remember it was Arsenal who started all of that. I shall say allegedly, because I don't know what the veracity of this is, but I did see a tweet last night saying that loathsome individual Mo Hadder, who's on the Arsenal fan channel and is an accountant and is a very hateful, nasty piece of work, I heard that he apparently got thrown out for homophobic chanting.
I don't think he did, because I was trying to follow his timeline to find out what was going on. I think there was an incident, and he was spoken to, but I don't believe he said in his tweet he wasn't thrown out. He was allegedly questioning why there were two men together at a football match, which is like, okay, a football match, two men together. Mm. So
it's hardly homophobic.
Exactly. But listen, he's typical of, you know, this Arsenal fan base. But then you've got people like Claude, who I've got a bit respect for, because he gets Arsenal, he gets the frustration. He doesn't like what's going on. You see him with his passion and his anger, and at least he gets it. But most of them are just idiots, some of the stuff they're putting up.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, Sills, because, you know, it's absolutely true. And I think this is the kind of point that I'm trying to make. There is a payoff and a punchline in this in a minute, but, you know, I know, like you do, like we all do, I'm sure, a lot of old-school Arsenal fans who are pretty much like us, you know, who were going, you know, been going for years, who get it, who get the culture of football, who get the passion of football, you know, and they're not like these bellends who are merchandise city and all the rest of it. And that's why I like Claude. That's why we all love Claude, because Claude is one of those. And you know, okay, I'm sure he plays up to it on the camera, and he's as culpable as the rest of them. But I like Claude because I feel Claude is what Arsenal, like us, used to be like. And actually, therein lies the problem. And I think this is something we need to be very mindful of, that when we expand Stamford Bridge to a similar kind of capacity, you know, they are a cautionary tale, yeah, Arsenal, because we already pick up a lot of, you know, plastics and tourists. And I say that with small P and T's, because, you know, they have different meanings for different people. But let's put it another way. We already pick up a lot of transient support because of where we are in London and the fact that it's in a flashy part of town. When we increase that capacity, there is a danger that we could go the same way as Arsenal. And that would be just, I mean, too much to think.
I mean, we've got to just be careful not to get away from our true fan base. Because that's the core of Chelsea. That's Chelsea's history. That's, you know, generations like myself, third generation Chelsea. This is what, you know, the club is built upon. You know, but
it depends how popular we are as well, though, doesn't it?
Or what league we're in, apparently. So.
because if they had difficulty in filling the remaining, you know, how many there were, 20,000 seats, so they've had to cast a wider net to get people. I'm not convinced that would be the case with Chelsea, because there seem to be so many thousands who fail to get tickets every game because we're sold out all the time.
Yeah, but you say that, Jonathan, and I know a very good couple of friends of mine who were season ticket holders at Arsenal before they built the Emirates. They had to wait something like 10 years in a waiting list to get a season ticket. Such was the demand for season tickets at the old Highbury.
I mean, what summed it up about being Arsenal? I spoke to my friend at Arsenal Station yesterday, and there must have been, the space of 5 minutes, about 50 or 60 day trippers, as I like to call them, turning up with selfie sticks, cameras. And one guy turned up with two suitcases going to the match. I was like, no, it's not. There's no hotel there. It's what football's become. I mean, there's so much exposure worldwide. That's why there's so much focus on, you know, shirt sales in Asia and other places. What I want to do is just focus on the core, which is Chelsea, our core fan base. And that's what it's all about. But maybe it's a very idealistic approach, but that's what I would like to see.
Well, it's fair enough, Dan, and I think a lot of us share that, although one could argue it's a bit selfish, but then we don't support Chelsea for everybody else. We support them because we support them. Dan Levine, just to wrap this part up with the immutable question, which is, you know, how good will it be if the two victories that we've had over Arsenal this season are what prevents them from winning the title?
It'd be marvellous, wouldn't it? And you know, if you count out the stats, the 6 points we've had at Arsenal this year have been 21% of all of our league points, which is pretty desperate stuff. But if that stops then it will have all been worthwhile. In a way, it may even be up there with Denver Bar against Steven Gerrard, mightn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Good shout.
Yeah.
I'd like their season to deteriorate now, though, completely, and them to finish halfway.
Or finish fourth again.
Mm, yeah, I mean, I think finishing fourth would be hilarious and enough. I mean, it sounds very petty and kind of Arsenal and Scouse-like, but I think that they deserve such amount of derision from us because of what they're like and how they behave that I can wish them nothing but ill will, apart from Claude, who I like. And on that slightly humanistic and positive point, we will end this part, and we'll come back to you in a sec. And what will we be doing? Ah, we will be praising Costa, not burying him. And we'll also be praising Fabregas, because I think he deserves it. And Clive and Gary, I will be praising Fabregas. And, of course, we'll be asking if they are well and truly back, and will this win and performance against Arsenal lead to a charge at the table? Or was it just that Arsenal are so pitiful? Anyway, we will see you in a second.
The only place for Chelsea fans. Footballfancast.com. Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to Chidge and the Boys on the Chelsea Football Fancast. Total nutters and proper Chelsea.
Right, welcome back. I am Stanford Chidge, and you are listening to the Chelsea Fancast. And on this rather weird and virtual and somewhat probably background noisy show, I have the lovely Dan Levine.
Good evening.
I have the wonderful Dan evening. Silver. And I have the inimitable Jonathan.
Lovely Hill. Word to describe me. Thank you, darling.
You are nothing but unique, darling. Now, I mean, I'm going to basically spend most of this part, about all of this part, talking about Costa and talking about Cesc. And also asking, are we back? And are they back? But, I mean, first of all, though, I thought it was a wonderful performance by Drogba. Proper centre-forwards performance.
Costa.
Holding up the
Costa.
Ball, leading the line.
Drogba.
Well, there you go. That is the living and breathing textbook definition of a Freudian slip. Because, actually, that's right. I mean, you know, his performance was Drogba-like. And it was so wonderful to see. I mean, I think, you know, the silver lining to all of that, or the cream on the cake, was him getting Mertesacker sent off. Before we get into any of this in great depth, it was definitely a red, wasn't it, Dan Levine?
No question at all. I could not believe that a player with the experience and, you know, the pedigree of Mertesacker, a man who's played 104 times, the world champions, decided to slide in so rashly and stupidly on Costa. He deserves the red card for the stupidity alone, but it's definitely a red.
Yeah, but Mertesacker is absolute shit. And I actually tweeted the minute he got sent off saying, actually, I think that actually gives Arsenal an advantage now he's been sent off, because he's so
shit.
He's
got a training circle of a tractor.
I mean, he really is. I mean, the bottom line about the World Cup, Dan, is that Germany won the World Cup because they stopped playing him after the quarter-final.
Yeah, and well, the person who I think is luckiest in that thing is Kieran Gibbs, who wasn't on the pitch to be sent off. So, it's, you know...
But it just... It just shows you how crap Wenger is defensively and tactically. If he thinks that Mertesacker is such a good defender, and then he even makes him captain, although of course apparently he then gave the armband to T.O. Walcott because he's had 10 years at Arsenal. And what are they like? They're just mental. But anyway, and enough of that. One thing I did want to pick up on. I'm sure Dan was very well aware of this. Dan Levine was very well aware of this, but Wenger's reaction to Mertesacker getting sent off was just...
He doesn't believe it. To this day, he believes that it was Costa got him sent off.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was trying to get Costa into trouble, wasn't he? Because he picked up on the Gabriel sending off earlier in the season, and I just and then when I think it was the Sky bloke, I can never remember his name. But anyway, when he kind of pressed him on it, he just said, I did not see it. And he basically realised what he was saying, and whoever it was he was interviewing him was going to try and pressure him on that point. What an absolute pillock of the first degree.
If Cagey came out and said that it was wrong, I'd have a bit more respect for him. The fact he's so myopic and so Arsenal can do no wrong despite over 100 red cards in his career. It's madness. I could see from where I was standing, it was a red card. It was blatant. Koscielny was not going to get right across and cover it.
It was absolutely below me. And it was an instant. Immediately, I actually turned to my Chelsea man next to me and I said, he's off.
Yeah, and it's actually good to see Clattenburg not bottle a decision.
I think I said earlier, they were all debating that he hadn't actually touched him. And he made it up somehow that Costa had rolled. I mean, it was a slight, pike plus three somersaults. But it was
minimal.
Definite contact. He'd definitely been taken
contact.
Out. And he was on goal.
One at a time, Dan.
And it was intent as well. I mean, there was minimal contact. But it was a foul because Shirley was not going to get around and cover. And I could see from my seat that it was a great and red. I mean, there's no doubt. And at least Clattenburg didn't bottle the decision because I thought he might bottle it and give him the yellow card.
I don't know how he could possibly have done that because he was right on goal and there was nobody else around. He looked. And also Wenger said that he'd made a hasty and harsh decision. He took several seconds before he made the decision, Clattenburg. He assessed it and realised that, I've got no option but to send him off.
But having said that, amazingly enough, Clattenburg didn't send any Chelsea players off, which I was really expecting.
He missed a blatant penalty, though, as we all know,
Yeah, I mean, that's another interesting thing, actually. Dan, yep. Levine, was there much talk in the post-match presser about Fabregas not getting a penalty?
Yeah, quite a lot. And I thought Hiddink did quite well in taking a bit of moral high ground here because he said that, while he could see that the referee might consider it not to be a penalty and he'll sort of give him that one, although we all knew it was, the red card was definitely a red card. So he was basically saying to Wenger, I can watch a match fairly, you can't. So I don't mind conceding a little bit of yardage on that. But it looks to almost everyone that I was sat with in the press area, certainly it looked like a penalty.
Yeah, I thought it was blatant. I think everybody here thinks. I mean, there's a few people on Mixler who are saying much the same. Dazza says that Clattenburg bottled it, and I think he did. And I think, actually, he probably bottled it because he realised that he would have to send Koscielny off if he gave it, probably.
Possibly, I mean.
Because he was on a yellow. Yeah. He was already on a yellow.
We could have given the penalty and a final warning, which would have been. And also, Fabregas' interview on Sky post-match, he kind of chose his words very carefully, but without leave us up for a charge. He said, I'm not surprised, but he didn't necessarily question.
Anyway, Jonathan, Costa, I really just think he played very well. As I said earlier on, he held the ball up really well, led the line, proper striker.
There was that wonderful surge into the penalty area.
He's now scored 6 goals in 6. Do you think he's back?
Oh, without any shadow of a doubt. I thought it was a fantastic performance. My worry is that he's got this dodgy tibia now, hasn't he? Because he went off injured again. But I reckon if he'd stayed on, because we've talked about this before, but Remy was atrocious when he came on.
We are going to talk about
later,
that in a minute.
I'm holding our horses. But the surge that Costa did into the penalty area when he forced check to save at the near post was brilliant. I mean, suddenly brilliant pace. He was absolutely on fire, and it was joyous to behold because it makes you think. Well, we've got now. If he carries on playing like this, and the level of the team goes up, we've got a chance against PSG, which I never ever thought we'd have at all.
Well, you never know with the Champions League, do you? Because it's at the end of the day, it's a cup competition.
Well, if they
legs.
Give us a chance to play, if PSG give us the same as Arsenal, if they don't, I think we have great difficulty in breaking down teams who defend and break and defend and then get us on the break. And PSG won't play like that at all.
I mean, what?
Now, sorry, Dan. You mentioned his injury, Jonathan. Dan, is there any Dan Levine? Is there any news on Costa's injury?
No, not at present. The players have been given 2 days off, Monday, Tuesday. So, as with all these things, they wait for the swelling to go down a bit. They do some scans. We should know a little bit more about it by either late Tuesday or Wednesday, I'd imagine. But Hiddink did seem to think it's not that major an issue.
Yeah. I mean, anyway, actually, we've got Milton Keynes in the cup on Sunday, so maybe there's an opportunity to rest Costa, play Remy, dare I say, or even better, play Traore. Dan, what do you reckon about that?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's MK Dons, so even if he isn't 100%, we could probably afford to rest him for that game. I was just going back to what Jonathan was saying about PSG. The fact is, they're in the least competitive league in Europe, so they're going to be given a test. So, you know, I'm not beyond the realms of possibility he might get through. Just kind of going back to what Jonathan was saying earlier about PSG.
Well, like I said, Silves, I mean, you know, you never know with the Champions League. Strange things happen. So I'm not kind of like saying we're going to win it. I'm not saying we're not going to win it. But either way, you never know what's going to happen. Now, Dan Silves, do you think Costa's back?
He's getting there. He's been the last sort of 4 or 5 games. He's focused more on playing football than starting fights everywhere. He's kind of he still had that anger, the edge. But he stopped the histrionics and stopped the kind of squaring up to everybody. I mean, a couple of times we was offside, got really frustrated. He punched the flag, which was quite funny. But generally, he looks a lot sharper. He looks fit. He lost weight.
He had a go at Dave, didn't he, for getting in his way when he kind of volleyed.
I was trying to start Diego Costa. He fights with his mom, but nobody picks up.
Well, I mean, you know, bottom line is, it's all fantastic and really good to see, and I really hope he is. But I tell you what else was good to see, and you know, I give Fabregas a really, really hard time for most of the time, and I freely admit that my bias against Fabregas is really down to the fact that he's ex-Arsenal and Barca, and I can't get beyond that. But praise where praise is due. I mean, he got the man of the match yesterday, and I think it was well deserved. I thought it was a really good performance, and it was and he controlled the game. And you know, praise where praise due, Jonathan. I thought he was.
Thought he was brilliant, especially in the first half. I think the second half we defended a bit more. We were more intent on defending, but he was swifter than I've seen him. He wasn't knocked off the ball easily, and his passing was much more accurate. It was a terrific first half performance.
Yeah, well, that's good to see. Dan, were you Dan Silves? Were you?
I thought he was outstanding. I thought he covered a lot of ground. He was very practical going forward. He used the ball wisely. I just thought he looks a lot sharper. I mean, the whole team looked fitter and sharper, and dare I say it, happier. There seems a bit more. Even Matic, a bit under radar. But I thought he had a much better game. It's a bit more offensive than normal because he was pushing forward a few times. I mean, he was the one. His misplaced cross to Branner for the goal.
His distribution was better as well.
Yeah. Going back to distribution, Courtois' distribution was shocking throughout the match.
Yeah, it was.
This guy was awful. I don't think he hit a Chelsea player once for a kick. But I know.
It was a bit poor, wasn't it? But I don't know what to think about Courtois. But you know what? I'm not going to diss him off this week. This week I want to be happy and positive. Dan Levine, I've got a question for you. And I think you and I had a bit of Twitter badinage about this last night. I mean, you know, I absolutely think there's no doubt in my mind that Fabregas had an excellent game yesterday and was deservedly man of the match. But I think there should be some mitigation here because against Arsenal, he didn't come up against a side where they had anybody who was prepared to tackle him or to exploit the space behind him, which he always leaves. So, I mean, I'm not trying to be churlish, but that is a fact.
Yeah, I think it is. It's hugely ironic that it's against Arsenal, against the manager who knows him so well, who knows exactly what he can do, and who knows that if you give him a little bit of space, then he'll run right at it. And for Wenger to not even attempt to nail him down, to not press him at any stage in the game, to give him all that yardage, you know, it just made no sense. And fair play to Fabregas for running right with it and deservedly picked up the champagne.
Yeah, but that's typical Wenger, though, isn't it, Dan? You see, because he never, ever, ever gives a shit what the opposition are going to do. He's always made a thing of saying, I don't care about what they do, it's all about what we do. But that's why he ends up losing these big matches, because, I mean, you know, Pardew, Pulis, you name it, decent managers go, Fabregas, right, stick a couple of people on him, kick him, press him, and exploit the space in behind, and we'll get a result. And that's what's happened.
Yeah. He likes to think he's a football purist. In most people's eyes, that means he's a failed football manager, really.
Well, he's a specialist in failure, and I think that Mourinho, who has that wonderful knack of coming up with epithets that stick, absolutely nailed it with that one. Now, I mean, apart from clearly Cesc and Costa being back, we hope. Actually, before we go into that, one more thing, actually, and I'm going to ask Jonathan this, see what he has to say. The other thing I thought that actually worked very, very well with Cesc, although, you know, one needs to take into account what I've just said about you know, not being pressured. I do think, and it's interesting that Gus has seemed to have done this a lot, but he's playing him as the number 10 rather than in defensive midfield. And we've been saying this a lot on the programme this year, that if you are going to play Fabregas, play him in the number 10 role, because at least it mitigates any defensive damage he can create. What do you think?
Well, I think that's why he's put Matic and Mikel together, because it then allows him just to play in that position, doesn't it? And De Bos, that's the idea. It didn't work very well against Everton, did it? Because the second that he took Matic off, they scored two goals. But I think it makes it much more stable, and perhaps this is the first time it's worked.
I mean, you know what, Jonathan? I think you're absolutely spot on, because, I mean, Dan Levine will bear this out as well, because I think in the presser afterwards, one of the things that Hiddink went on about was it's all about the balance. And we said it again, you know, before Christmas. We look so imbalanced most of the time, and we could all see it. And Gus has come in, and he's picked Mikel, who he's always trusted and liked from his first time here. And we seem to have balance now, Dan Levine.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I think one of the things about Fabregas, you know, Hiddink said that, you know, he likes to play football. He likes to have the space to do that. But he also said you can't always have that. You can do that against Arsenal, but you can't do it against other teams. And that is why Hiddink is so very, very different to Wenger, because he does, you know, line up his teams to be what's opposite him. And it's just about making sure that the player knows that, and the player knows they're going to get the chance to show their flair.
Good stuff. All right, Dan Sills, I mean, you know, we did miss a lot of chances at the end as space opened up, and I mean, on another day it really should have been, I think, 3 or 4 nil. And I think the main culprit really was Remy when he came on. And I mean, I think there are two schools of thought with this, Silves. One is that, you know, Remy really is unbelievably bad, but there's another side to me that wonders whether we've let him down a little bit, because, you know, we've not given him the opportunities that we could have done. And I mean, he did look like a very, very rusty player yesterday.
His injury record is concerning, because he can't seem to keep fit. I mean, he made two very bad decisions when he had chances to shoot, and his decision making was poor. Perhaps he lacking match fitness, lacking sharpness, lacking confidence. I mean, he does score goals, but it's the question is he good enough for us? I don't think he is.
Well, I wonder. I mean, his first touch was appalling yesterday, and that looked like a man who'd not played for a while. And you're right. I mean, his decision making was atrocious. Not just in who he was passing to or not passing to, but his offside.
I also think there's one chance, I think, the last couple of minutes when he was through, and instead of pulling it left, he pulled it right straight at the defender, and they cleared it. And the other time, I think he, rather than shooting, he squared it to William. This is right before the final whistle, and William shot across goal. So clearly lacking confidence, decision making's poor. But then we never seen him have a run of sort of 8, 9, 10 games, like we said with Drogba last season. He needs games to build up his fitness and his confidence and his levels. But Remy, because where we play, he won't get that chance.
I think, sadly, I mean, it'll be interesting what Dan Levine says about this, but I know we're going to be talking about transfers and stuff in part three. But I have a feeling that Remy's ship has sailed, that it's just not working for him and it's not working for the club, and I can see him going. What do you reckon?
He does look like a player whose confidence is completely shot, doesn't it? And that is always a difficult thing to bring things back from. The difficulty will be whether we can find somebody to replace him. You know, he's only going if we can find someone else. And is Pato really that someone else? I'm not sure he is.
Well, we'll hold our powder on that one, but I think you're right about Remy. I mean, the other thing, Dan, is that, you know, I thought that we were creating a lot more goal threats yesterday. We just look at, I mean, apart from the balance that clearly Gus has put in, we seem to be a lot more fluid. Do you agree with that?
Dan
Levine.
Yeah, certainly. And it, notable from Costa in particular, that he runs into places that he was never doing under Mourinho. You know, there's something obviously that has gone on there. And he is now playing to a fuller capacity now, you know, more closer to the level that we've seen in the past. I think Dan said something interesting about how they look happier. And they definitely do. Obviously, since we got rid of Pappy Hillabodji, I reckon he was the bag.
Yeah, we got a statue up to... Which one of you is dying? Is that Dan or is that
me?
Jonathan?
I'm fine. I'm alive.
I'm fine as well. Okay. Can I just go back to Remy a second?
Of course.
It's always talking about his confidence. I think the fact that he was offside 5 times, I think at least, was something. It's nothing to do with confidence. It's just to do with not your heart isn't in it. I can't get that at all. You know, it's so simple not to be offside.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I tweeted yesterday or today that, because they were playing a high line, he should be playing off the last shoulder, because he's easily got the pace over retiring off the defence. Watch the line, play off the shoulder, run in between the gaps, and he didn't do it.
No, of course he didn't.
Yeah. And the other good thing is that Hazard's back. Hopefully, if everybody else is happy, Hazard's happy, we might have a little renaissance the last 4 months of the season.
Well, you know what? You've segued that beautifully, mate, because I just wonder, you know, Hazard did look much more up for it, even if he only played a cameo, and Costa and Fabregas look like the players they were last for the first half of last season, certainly. We've got a better balance. It looks good with Mikel in the holding role. You know, do you think that we can go on a charge up the table?
It's possible. I mean, it was a big win yesterday. It's sort of, you know, we've got United, who were woeful, and Newcastle and Watford. So if we can come out of that with 7 points, maybe even 9, then I think anything's possible. Because if we could, that is a championship-winning squad, and if all the key players from last season are back towards their top level, we're a good team, a difficult team to beat.
So, and if everybody in the division is still shipping points as they are at the moment, it's, you know, who knows where you're going to finish?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing, guys, is that, you know, when Chris came in last time and managed us, he didn't. He only lost one match to Tottenham away, I think, didn't he? So he was basically unbeaten, and he's already unbeaten at the moment. So Dan Levine, there is. I mean, I do see. I think maybe it's clicked, and maybe we can charge up the table. What do you think?
Can we charge up the table? We are charging up the table. We're up to 13th now. 13th dizzy heights. You know, one thing I just want to nail down quickly, because there's been a little bit of talk about can fourth be done. I think John Terry said it was still possible. Hiddink said, no, it really isn't. However, he says, if the captain believes it is, then, okay, we've got to take that at face value. But I think we need to manage expectations here. I can't see fourth is in any way possible.
Well, I would agree with you in a normal season, but I don't think this is a normal
complete
season.
Abnormal season, Chidge.
I mean, here we go. Here's something. I was watching Sky Sports News before we went on air, and they were absolutely having a go at Man United, much to my hilarity, about they're breaking records and shitness for them this year. And this is the lowest amount of points they've ever had after 23 games in the Premier League. And yet, where are they? They're fifth.
They're thereabouts.
You know, the bottom line is that everybody is basically a lot more shit than they were, and people will lose games. So if we could go the rest of the season maybe losing one or two games, which, you know, is if we get our championship form back and we've got Goose in charge, he's a decent manager, it's not inconceivable that we might get into fourth.
I think we need to hope that Leicester shit the bed, because they keep winning games. And you thought they'd drop by now, but they're still there thereabouts, because that's the top four as it stands could conceivably stay as is.
I mean, look, I think the lovely thing is just to kind of round this one off before we go to a break. It's lovely to win a match that mattered a lot and play well and look like the Chelsea of old, and have a lovely warm feeling and to lord it over those arse wipes from North London again. It's just wonderful, isn't it? I think we'd all agree with that.
Can I make one very last quick point? When Peter Cech came out the second half, he got an absolutely fantastic reception from the Chelsea fans. And yet, Arsenal fans still with Fabregas arrest our case.
Yeah, well, you know, they're a bunch of arse wipes, as I said. All right, enough of that. After the break, we will be having a chat about the transfer rumour circulating on a daily basis around Chelsea and asking who must go, who might go, and who should stay at Chelsea in the summer. We will see you lot in a very short while.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fan.
Chidge.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great! But I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Fancast. Proper Chelsea.
Footballfancast.com.
That I am Stanford Chidge, and of course you are listening to Chelsea Fancast with the lovely Dan Levine.
And it's a funny story, that, isn't it? It's come completely from left field. I don't think anyone was expecting to see that, but it looks like it's going to happen.
It's
Petrescu's side in China that are after him. He's the manager there, it seems Rami isn't happy for some reason, mainly because he's not playing matches. But 25 million, I think. Although Rami is a great guy and he's energetic and that sort of thing, he's 28, 29 years old. It's not bad money for him.
No, I mean, I'd agree with that, Dan. I mean, what I would say, I mean, I personally, I would, I mean, it's funny actually, because this we could have left to the end of this part where I really want to talk about who should go and who should stay. But I mean, I love Ramirez. I mean, I love him because I got to interview him and he's a lovely fella. I love him because he scored goals of the season. I love him because he scored one of the best goals ever seen in a Champions League semi-final and helped us to win it. And I love him because he kicks people for fun and he's my kind of a player. Having said that, he is probably... I've never seen a Brazilian with a worse first touch than him. And really, I don't really ever see him as much more than an impact sub or a good squad player. But I think that we will be poorer for letting him
we
go.
We thought that he would go last year. Thought he'd go in the close season last year. I remember talking about that on the programme.
I wonder if his new contract was just to increase his value, because he only signed a new contract in December, November, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you never know. Maybe that does happen. Yeah. So, Sills, you're going to be sorry to see.
Yeah,
you
I mean, listen, he's played over 200 games for us, and he's really lets us down. And that Barcelona goal, he'll be Chelsea folklore forever. Albeit it might have been a really heavy second touch, I don't know. But I just think when he called in Man City goal of the season, he's a good player. As long as we bring somebody else in, or it means Loftus Cheek gets more of a chance, I'm happy.
Anyway, I think the other shot of this, possibly Dan Levine, is of course that if he goes, maybe it will give more space and opportunity for Ruben Loftus Cheek.
That's exactly it, and we've got a hope beyond hope that's the case, because you can see that he leaves that sort of shape on the pitch, doesn't he? And at the moment, Ruben is quite clearly third, fourth choice for that department, and he moves up the pecking order. I miss Rami for the goals, like you say, and just for the sort of tireless, blowing smoke out of his arse performances, because he never ever stopped when he ran. But one of the things I won't miss about him is his brain dead tackling and his desperation to get a red card at any possible moment.
And also, his distribution was occasionally dreadful. He had some games where he seemed capable of hitting a blue shirt.
I love the fact that Ramirez kicks people, though. I like a player who could mete out a bit of retribution, so I will miss him for that. Right, just to move on, there's been a couple of other rumours too. I'm going to talk to Dan about this first, and then I'll bring you two lads in after that, if I may. But Dan, Pato is rumoured to be close. Is that true?
There's certainly been interest in him. There's been interest in him for a long time. One wonders why, because I think to most people's gaze, he looks like a bit of a sort of finished, washed-up type character who's never really done it in Europe. Who knows? I mean, it does look like Michael Emanalo is selecting all of the transfer targets from 2011 at the moment.
Yeah,
it's
just
manager.
Well, I don't know. Dan Sills, what do you think about?
I think when he came on AC Milan, he was young and very, very talented. He's had a succession of injuries, which obviously has hampered his career, and he's ended up going back to Brazil.
He's consistently injured, isn't he?
I was hearing, I think it's Tim Vickery was saying that he sort of bounced around two or three clubs in Brazil. And he's expensive by Brazilian standards, and they want to get him off the books. So they're probably.
He's got 26 goals, though, hasn't he, this season so far?
Yeah, I think his record at AC Milan was fairly respectable. I think he's a 1-2. So he's not a mug, but again, it's a player that's had a catalogue of injuries. We know what happened last time we signed a player with. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's Falcao all yeah, over again, exactly. Isn't it? It just sounds like mad.
If it's a loan deal for six, yeah, exactly. If it's a loan deal for 6 months with an option to buy his success, it's a no-brainer because, in fairness, I'm a step up from Falcao. But there's no smoke without fire.
Hold on a second, guys, because some really interesting feedback on Mixler here. Mark Goodshit, and Gary have both said that. Well, actually, Mark said this, but he says that Pato was apparently a Mourinho signing, which I've also heard. And also that he's heard that Hiddink is not so sure about it, Dan Levine. Can you verify that?
Well, you've got to hope. I wouldn't go as far as to say he's a Mourinho signing, that it was Mourinho who was pursuing him. I think it's a club pursuit going on there. We've got another 5-6 days of this. I wish it would go away.
Well, okay. Let's just run through a few more of the rumours. Okay, I'm going to read them all out, and then I'll bring Dan in first, and then the other two you can comment on it. Lavezzi's a rumour. Tejera is a rumour, but apparently he's going to Liverpool, not us. Stones is still being talked about. Weirdly, Thiago Silva's being talked about. And I won't deal with the others. Oh, we've given Branner an extension. I think we should mention that. So, Dan, can you just run through those quickly and tell me what you think of any of those?
Sharon. Yeah, Teixeira we're definitely after, but he does look like he's going to go to Liverpool, and that does flag up some warning signs, really, doesn't it? If people are choosing.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that? I think I know what you mean, but you. Explain.
I mean, if we've fallen that far down the pecking order that a player of that magnitude, who's got a mate playing at Chelsea and William, has decided to go to Liverpool, who are not going to get Champions League football, then that is worrying, isn't it? Really.
Well, you know what? If he does go to Liverpool, he'll regret it when they steal his hubcaps and nick his house and rob his house. So,
but I read the reason was that they put the price up, and that Emanalo wasn't keen on pursuing it as a consequence because they felt that they were just taking the piss.
That sounds like a very Shakhtar thing to do. I mean, they do, they play the old Ukrainian negotiating game, which is when you say negotiate, they just double the price. So I can understand that. What about this Thiago Silva stuff and the Lavezzi stuff, Dan? Any truth in that?
Well, again, this seems to be, if it is true, and there's a certain amount of conjecture involved, if it is true, then it's again chasing players that were good 4 or 5 years ago. And it just doesn't seem to make much sense, really. Thiago Silva would surprise me an awful lot. Lavezzi maybe less so. But again, that's a little bit worrying, isn't it?
Well, I heard Lavezzi wants to stay in Italy anyway, so, and I mean, what the hell are we doing signing a 30-year-old?
He hasn't played for PSG. He's hardly played this year for PSG, has he?
I know, it's just mental, absolutely. So I know a lot of this is down to, press rumour and all the rest of it. And, how much of that can we actually genuinely believe? But, I mean, some of the rumours really make your hair fall out. It's just quite crazy, Dan. What's going on?
You mentioned John Stones as well there. I think that's a bridge that's been well and truly burnt, at least for the purposes of January. And I can't see why John Stones would want to come to Chelsea at the moment over Everton. But this stuff just sells papers. It just keeps agents in business. People talk about these moves, and people are touting potential future clubs for their clients. It's just a money making game.
It's just part of the game, really. Yeah. Then is what you're saying. Jonathan, are you happy about Branner getting a contract extension?
He played a lot better, didn't he? Earlier in the season, I wouldn't have believed it. I wouldn't have been very keen on it. But if it's a general malaise with the team and he can get back to his usual high level performance, then yeah, it's great. It's the same with Cahill. They've given Cahill a contract extension, haven't they, for 4 years, and yet he can't even get into the team. So I don't know. But perhaps this is also to the possibility then you sell them, and then you can sell them at a higher premium, a higher rate, can't you?
He's only getting a year's extension.
Oh, of course, it's only a year. on the early season performances, obviously not. But if he can improve in the way that he has over the past few games, well, perhaps he'll get back to normal.
And also, there's an argument that because he's inexperienced head in what could be a relatively young squad next season, it's probably worth having him because he's got the experience of being a winner. And our winners are suddenly leading the team, so we don't have many people with that kind of track record of winning competitions. And we need those sort of old experienced heads around.
Yeah, I mean, to be really honest, as far as Branagh's concerned, I mean, I know he's been shocking for a year, but you know, we've lost so many players. I mean, actually, you know, here's another thing. You know, Ramirez goes. That's yet another one of the Champions League winning team that's gone, and I worry about the fact that we have so few of the players who grew up with that period of Chelsea dominance, and I mean, you know, Branagh will be a good influence around the dressing room, and he does have leadership qualities, and you know, I think to lose another player like that would be a real mistake. So I'm all for him getting another year. I got to be honest. What do you think, Dan Levine?
Yeah, I'm pleased about it. Hello, are you hearing me loud and clear?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Excellent. I'm very pleased about it. I know a lot of people aren't, but I like Branagh on a personal level. I think he's a generally dependable sort of guy. He's been showing up a bit this season because people have found a sort of a niche in the armour and they've attacked it. But I think he's a very, very good professional. And I think he shows great influence, particularly to the younger players in the dressing room.
Now look, there's a couple of other things that have been in the rumour mill this week, both of which are quite interesting. One is that Ronald Koeman apparently joked that he was hoping that Gus would put a good word in for him for the manager's job, and then admitted that he was joking and it was all bullshit. And then the other one is that apparently Allegri, who's the Juventus manager who won the title with them or something, apparently he's being earmarked for the manager's job. Dan Levine, what do you think of that?
Well, they're looking at the moment, and the worry is that there doesn't really appear to be a plan B. That they went into the start of this season knowing it was a possibility they may not finish it with Mourinho. And they haven't got anything really lined up. And that you know, we keep on going back to this succession planning issue, both in the team and with the manager. Simeone is one of the guys that they really, really want. But, of course, he doesn't speak a word of English. And at the moment, why would you go to Chelsea? Because there's no guarantee of Champions League football. We are where we are. Who knows where we'll get with that?
Is Goose likely to carry on for another year?
He is 69 years old, and he has talked a lot in the past about sort of hanging it up. And you know, he likes jetting off around the world and having a good time. And who wouldn't? Particularly with the sort of means that he's got. I can't really see a great deal of future prospect that a 69-year-old manager is going to be 70 before long, can you?
I mean, well, short term, I mean, you think if we want an experienced manager to get us into Champions League, when arguably he might only have a 40 or 50 game season with no European football, he's a good manager. He's obviously good for the club in terms of PR, which I know is important to them because he's quite humble. So as a short term fix, and we can't get who we want, I couldn't think of any other alternatives. Anybody thinks on that?
If he's offered a large amount of money by Abramovich, he might stay for another year. You never know.
The players respect him. Players like him. The club, the fans like him. So listen, if we can't get our main targets, he knows the club, he knows the team. It would make sense to give him a year. See what we can do.
It certainly is a decent insurance policy, isn't it? But I would imagine if we do end up with him next season, that it suggests that something's gone badly wrong in the recruitment process.
Well, that could be at all levels in terms of transfers and everything else. There's obviously something fundamentally not quite right with that structure, but that's for another podcast.
Well, I think to be fair, this is something that we've known for far too long, but it's really hard to say. I mean, we were saying on the show last week we were hoping that they would have already, you know, been talking to one or two people and, you know, getting them lined up. But, I mean, the bottom line is we have no idea. I mean, it's either going to be utter chaos and incompetence or very smart and forward planning. But the truth is, I don't think we're ever going to really know. But, I mean, you know, I don't know who I want. I really don't. I mean, well, I do know who I want, but I don't know who they're going to get. I mean, I'd have Mark Hughes in a shot, as would Joe the Blue. Well, Joe the Blue says technical director. I'd have him as the manager. I really, really would. But I don't know what you think. I mean, Dan, you weren't on the show last week when I was chuffing on about that. What do you think about that?
I think he's proved himself to be a decent manager. He's playing some very good football at Stoke. But I think he's the wrong sort of face. And I don't think it's ever going to happen for that very reason. You know,
because of what? Sorry,
the wrong sort of face. And I don't think he'll happen for that reason. First of all, he's too British. And that is not the way we roll.
We're just going to get the next European managerial cab off the rank.
Pretty much, yes. And I would imagine that no matter what negotiations are going on, the club won't have a clue whether they've been successful until after, say, the FA Cup final, say, the Champions League final, and whichever of those decides what competitions we're playing in what season.
Yeah. And I think this is a real problem, actually. And I wonder how much we're... I mean, you mentioned the whole Tejera thing a minute ago. And I wonder how much of a problem this is going to be, that we are a club in limbo, which is what I said on the programme last week, until the summer, and we may not be having Champions... Well, we probably won't be having Champions League football, and that may well affect things. And I think this could severely affect not just the managerial appointment, but also the transfers in and out. And clearly, we are going to possibly either need to get some more players because we need to get some quality in, and also because we may have to replace some amazing quality who might just bugger off because they don't fancy it anymore. At which juncture, I think it's a good time to kind of go through this little list that I wrote out of the who must stay, who must go variety. So, starting from the who must go, well, it looks like Pappy's gone, hasn't he, Dan? He's gone out on loan.
Well, apparently Werder Bremen has seen a football of that, and it's something that none of us have seen.
I think, you know, even if he hasn't gone already, he should go. I think Falco absolutely has to go, the sooner the better. I think it's pretty clear that Remy should go. I also think Pedro should go. And quite frankly, I think Rahman should go, because I just don't think he's good enough. And I think we need to get somebody better, a much better, understudy to Dave. I don't know. So that's my must-go list. Has anybody got any objections with those?
No, I think I agree.
I agree with 100%. You completely, should.
Yeah. Pedro's too weak for the league.
Pedro's too lightweight for the league.
Hang on, one of you.
Pedro's too lightweight for the league.
Yeah, which is what we were saying last week. So you'd agree with all of that?
Mm. Yeah.
Where it gets a bit more complicated, actually, and I kind of stopped myself from including this rumour when we were speaking about things a minute ago, but I think these players may well go if rumours in the press are to be believed, and they would be Courtois, Matic, we know Ramirez is pretty much gone, Oscar, Costa and Hazard. So, Dan Levine, what do you think of that little list?
Well, with the last one out, turn off the lights, please. There's not many left after that, are there?
Well, but you know what? I mean, if you believe what you were reading in the papers last week, this is eminently possible, you know, and actually... okay, let me go through why it makes sense. Courtois, we know he's going to go back to Spain sometime, and if Real Madrid are able to, they'll have him like a shot. Matic is arguably mentally destroyed and could do with a break and a new start somewhere else. Ramirez is gone, as I said already. We know he's gone already. Oscar has been, you know, Juventus have been flirting with him for what seems like ever. Again, Costa might not like the idea of not playing in the Champions League. And, you know, Hazard and Zidane are a match made in heaven. So, I mean... It might sound like madness, but there could be some truth to this rumour, Dan. Levine, that is.
Well, we have to be very careful.
Dan, we've lost you. I'm going to go to Dan Silver. Hang on a minute. Dan Silver, what do you think of that?
I think there's a lot of merit in what you say. As we said last week, a week before, none of these players got any loyalty. They don't want to fight. They don't want to get out. They want the glory of the Champions League. That's what it's all about. So I could see... Courtois going, because he has a going. There'll come a point where we might just say, listen, one or two out, that's it, you're staying, tough, get used to it. Or we just literally rebuild again, because if you think we sell all those players you missed, that's got to be 200 million quid in the bank. You can get some pretty decent players, that sort of money, and rebuild the team.
I mean, I tell you what, sorry Dan, go on.
I say, yeah, because that's some seriously talented players. They'll go, they won't be missed. Because they haven't really endeared themselves to the fans in the same way the previous generations have. So if you,
well, you know, there's no. Hang on a minute. There's no doubt in my mind that we will miss Courtois because he's a good player. And we'll definitely miss Costa and Hazard if they go, because they are also top players.
No, I meant in terms of they go.
They don't want to be there. If they don't want to be there, shut the door on the way out. It's always been, it's always been my view as well. Jonathan, what do you think of that little list?
If they were under contract, why would they get rid of Courtois, for example? Why would, presuming that he, you know, they...
because Real Madrid might buy him, mate. That's why.
But aren't Real Madrid going to buy De Gea?
Well, they
might not be able to. I think, you know, a lot is up in the air because, of course, we don't quite know what the ramifications of Real Madrid's transfer buying ability
embargo,
is.
Yeah.
But it's possible, isn't it?
Well, they wouldn't have made such a fuss with Courtois if they would have kept check if they didn't think Courtois was going to be the next great thing. It just so happens that he hasn't been performing particularly well in the last few games. But you wonder what would happen if the whole of the team came up and started performing better, whether he would come up with it, or whether he's in fact has gone down to the level of the team. And the same with Matic. I'm not convinced that Matic is about not wanting to play for the club. I think it's that he's just undergone some bizarre transformation, whether he got burnt out or... I don't think it's through lack of pride, that's the impression I get. If Spurs can bring him back to the same level that he had, which there was evidence of in the game on Sunday, then I don't think they'll be selling him either. I like the list you came up with first of all, but I don't really agree with this list from the.
Don't get me wrong, Jonathan. I don't want any of them to go. I'm just saying.
You think
that
it was a list from the press, weren't you? Which
well, that's the rumor, isn't it? I mean, Ramirez is obviously gone or going. But
Ramirez is understandable because of the Loftus-Cheek setup, and the fact that he's hardly played at all this season. But the others, I can't see them decimating the team that way. It would mean you'd have to spend an enormous amount of money on getting. A completely new set of players in, which I don't think that the club would do personally.
You generate that by selling the players, though, because you generate 200 million selling all those players.
I know, but then you've got to somehow then you'll then be in that position of all the other clubs will be aware that you want to buy their players and they'll just put all the prices up.
Yeah. I think personally, Matic might have been just mentally destroyed by Mourinho, and that's why he's probably maybe now coming out the other side, and he's now beginning to get back to.
Kind of what I was saying, really. Dan Levine, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. The other great problem, of course, with if you have a clear out like that, is it's not just simply the financial issue. You need to persuade other players that they want to come back in. And where we are at the moment is like the 18th of May 2012. You've got a future that could involve, it could involve Eden Hazard, or it could involve Marco Marin. And it depends, you know, it's a very fine line which way it could go. So we could spend, we could bring in 200 million, but only be able to buy another 11 Marco Marins. That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very worrying. And I have a suspicion it might not end up like 2012. I mean, do you think any of those... forget Ramirez for a minute, but the five that I mentioned, do you think any of those might go in the summer, Dan?
I think there's a good chance that Eden Hazard will go. I think that one's almost guaranteed. I'd be very surprised if he's not a Real Madrid player come September. Matic obviously needs a lot of work with his psychological state. I don't know what's going on there. Oscar seems very, very likely to go as well, I think.
You think so? I mean, to be honest, Dan, I wouldn't be disappointed about Oscar going. I really wouldn't. I don't think he's really ever fulfilled the potential that he clearly has at Chelsea. You know, and I mean... I think sometimes you just have to say, you know what, you're never going to do it here, and doing, you know, doing one fantastic performance in five is just not good enough for me, Dan.
No, and he has a very, very sort of loyal bunch of fans who think that he's he's made out pure gold. I think the problem with Oscar is he's a sort of match the day player. He looks really, really good.
Yeah.
Sort of bunches of a few seconds, but then goes missing for another 85 minutes.
Yeah.
We need a bit more than that.
He's no Frank Lampard, that's for sure. All right, listen. Okay, there's another list here, which are the ones that I think should absolutely stay. And that would be Begovic, Aspi, Zouma, Terry, Branner, Cahill, Mikel, Fabregas, Willian, Kennedy, Traore, Loftus-Cheek. Obviously, the previous five that might go as well. But I think, you know, it's really interesting. And the reason I say this is because when I was thinking of this list, my first thought when I wrote it was, my God, there won't be any players left. Either I hate them all and I want them to go, or they'll go because they think we're shit. But actually, I think the reality is very, very different from that. And what it tells me is that we only need about four or five players, possibly, to get a very, very good strong, and then add that to possibly more youth coming through.
That's what Lampard said, that he wanted.
Yeah, well, if you notice, Jonathan, I've Loftus-Cheek, Traore, and Kennedy are in that squad.
In fact, there's a rumour that Traore's off on loan. Was in the paper this evening.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, interesting. What I think about your list as well is that Mikel is in your list of people staying, and I think that pre-Gus, he would have been in your list of people going.
Yeah, Mikel is always in my squad because he can do a job and he knows Chelsea. And as I said earlier on about Branagh, you know, culling the entire representative of the Champions League's winning squad has had a detrimental effect on us. You know, we haven't got the leaders, we haven't got people who get what Chelsea is about before the fancy Dan's turned up. And I think letting go of players like Mikel and even Ramirez is a mistake because I think they add something to the squad, if not the first team.
Can I just say in that moment also that we didn't say how well JT played on Sunday, by the way.
No, I second and third that. Dan, you're about to say something.
I was going to say, careful.
Levine.
I was going to say, careful, you've got the fancy Dans in the room with you at the moment.
I have got two fancy Dans in the first team squad of the Chelsea Fancast tonight, and the steady eddies of... Jonathan Kidd, a.k.a. JK, a.k.a. actor, reader, Bellend. So there we go. Now, I think really, I could just kind of like round this one up really by saying, you know, we must need somebody in the transfer window. I mean, for God's sake, we're so light in the striking department. Dan Levine, are we going to sign anybody, and are they going to be any good?
It seems to be a case of one man in, one man out. So with Ramirez off to China, presumably that will free up some funds, but it doesn't look like there's going to be anything extra made available. The belief is the players that we have are good enough to do the job at hand. Now, there's one big problem there, in that we definitely need a centre-half. But, you know, it doesn't seem to be much sign of that happening.
I mean, basically, sorry, Jonathan, I think it was you, wasn't it? I'll bring you in a sec. I just think it's an absolute shambles still, and it really worries me. The other thing, actually, when you're saying this whole policy of one in, one out, Dan, that tells me that, you know, money seems to be an overriding concern, which means that the board are having too much, you know, control over the transfer and the playing policy. And quite frankly, the board are more culpable than anything else for the mess that we're in. And frankly, if they carry on with this attitude, then they're just going to compound the mistakes they've made. Jonathan, I know you're desperate.
No, it's just adding to what you've just said. Isn't this because of the youth policy that they feel should be producing more players going into the first team? Isn't this why they're loath to actually purchase expensive players?
As I said before, I agree.
Abramovich's reaction to Loftus-Cheek scoring in the Scunthorpe game revealed so much to me that he, despite the fact of Loftus-Cheek not having a great game against Scunthorpe, the fact that he scored, you could see the glee with him thinking, well, perhaps, you know, a new era is upon us.
Well, there's a very simple solution to that, Jonathan, is number one, tell the manager who's temporary and fucking off anyway in the summer that he has to play 50% of the first team has to play that is a youth player. And then secondly, don't fucking throw your toys out of the pram when it all goes tits up.
Yeah, well...
It's pretty simple, isn't it? Anyway, sorry, who wants to speak? Yeah. Dan Sills, I haven't heard from you for ages. What do you think?
Levine, is there any call back some of our loan players like Solanke or people like that on loan? Anyone you can actually call back or not?
Well, you can always call them back if you want to, but I don't really think there's the will to do that.
Yeah. And the other point is, the whole window is a month. Why is everything so concentrated for the last three or four days? I mean, you've got a whole month of January to do the deals. You know January is that month, so surely they'd be pre-planning these transfers. Why does it take a whole month and then on Sky get their 12 hours of glory on deadline day? It seems bizarre that everything's literally concentrated on the last day. Why are these deals done January 2nd, 3rd and 4th?
Dan Levine?
I think part of the issue is that an awful lot of football clubs are run by idiots.
No shit.
There's no succession planning going on at any level anywhere. And you know, what's the betting we don't get to the 31st of January, 1st of February, and all of a sudden we've got some new Jilaboji type player who's coming in for £2.5 million or something that we never wanted in the first place?
All right, chaps, I think we've done that one to death. Apart from my final comment on this is that, you know, why didn't we pay £4 million for Charlie Austin, who may not have a long-term career at the club but could do a job for the next 6 months? It sounds madness to me. Who wants to answer that one? Hands up. I think Dan Sills went first.
I think he scored a goal on his debut. He's a quality striker. For £4 million, he's a short-termer.
No brainer.
Irrespective of injuries, you know, the guy's been playing game in, game out. The players get injuries, take a chance. It's £4 million, he's British. I believe he's a Chelsea fan, I could be mistaken. Let's get him in.
He is, yeah.
I know.
What have you got to lose?
I couldn't agree more. And on that depressing point, I'm going to say we're going to go to part four and wrap up the show. So after the break, we will have our usual roundup of Chelsea supporters news.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Football Fancast.
Righty ho, you lovely people. We are back in the final part of what has been an interesting show. I'm going to read out a couple of the Mixler stuff actually while we're on here. Ben Price 2 says, amazingly, Robert Fleck is available on a free transfer, definitely fitter than Falcao. He's about as fat as a house, I believe, Ben, but I think you're probably right. Gary says that Emanalo would definitely get it. And Tony, the lovely Tony Glover, Tony, who may well have figured out that we are actually doing this via Skype. And of course, the great news is that this means that Tony Glover can be on the show soon. I need to get in touch with you, Tony. But anyway, Tony says, can't get over how deluded some are about the youth. They are a revenue stream. We may get one or two, but stop kidding yourselves. We're squad building with them. Sadly, he may well be true. Cundy's getting an awful lot of love in here tonight, which I'm glad to see. He was absolutely winding up the Arsenal fans all evening yesterday. If I was you, after we've done our show at 10 o'clock, Cundy's going to be on Talk Sport with Goldstein. And if he's as pumped up as he was yesterday, it will be essential listening because he will be absolutely flying. So give it a listen. It'll be worth it. Right, enough of that. I'm Stan for Chidgen. Of course, you're listening to the Chelsea Fancast. And I've got these lovely people with me, and they are Dan Levine.
Good evening.
They are Dan Silver. And they are the lovely Jonathan Kidd.
Hello.
Now, Jonathan, would you like to read this wonderful email that we've got?
I would.
Okay, go for it, my son.
Hey, guys, love the show. Only listen to a handful of episodes. But I find you guys to be very honest and blunt, something I didn't completely expect. I assumed there'd be some Homerism towards the wonderful Blues. It's refreshing nonetheless. I'm from the States. To start, I know it's called football everywhere, but the US, I feel as if the English look at us Americans in a negative light for the following reasons regarding football, soccer. Number one, we are so late to the EPL and soccer football world. Number two, we have no idea of the tradition or current mood of the supporters in the boroughs and towns of the clubs we support from over here. Both of those statements, in my eyes, are true. Half of us here don't even know why we support the club we do. I started watching the World Cup in 1998-99. In the early 2000s, I started following Chelsea because I caught wind of a young defender named John Terry, who was drinking and partying while getting in fights at bars. Sounds like my kind of guy. I have a friend who supports MCFC simply because he likes the fact that they attack. So I understand the ridicule. The coverage in the States over the last few years has jumped ups and bounds. I watch less and less NFL every year, which is an absolute juggernaut here, and more and more soccer. It started with EPL, but now I can get televised matches from all major leagues over Europe. A gentleman on your show stated he really doesn't watch much soccer anymore unless Chelsea is playing.
That's me.
I don't watch much NFL anymore unless my team is playing. EPL gives me a hard-on, as he would say about cricket.
That was also
me. I know, that's what he meant. I understand the pubs over there are club-friendly only. I go to a local bar here. It's an LFC bar, English pub style place. The only issue with it is they show like five different matches on Saturday morning, which I might mention, it's outstanding drinking in a bar at 8 a.m. The problem is drinking in the morning, coming off drinking at night while watching your team with supporters from four other teams. Things get testy quickly. Some supporters are more annoying than others, e.g. Arsenal and Man U supporters. There's always that. My dream is taking a vacation to London to see Stamford Bridge to experience a match day. The environment seems so electric every match. To wrap all this up, I constantly wonder how far off our culture is on the soccer front. I once asked Steve Nicol and Craig Burley on Twitter, is it different in England? Because in the States, in any sport, winning is winning. Why is it that Jose was criticised for winning the league the way he did? Huge lead in table, then shut up shop. You get style points for entertaining? Why must some teams win a certain style? And they basically said, yes, certain clubs have a certain way of playing and winning. I don't want to be English, especially since my father is from Motherwell, Scotland. I just find your country amazing and way of doing things to be extremely interesting. Relegation may be the most beautiful thing in all of sports, especially since I'm from Philadelphia, where the 76ers have tanked for years to better their roster and pick in draft. I thank you guys for the time. I would love nothing more than to hear the views of you guys on any of these topics. And I'm in no way looking for a mention or shout out, but a response via email, even to help me understand the culture of football in your country, to compare to how it's progressed to in mine. I'm excited to see if Chelsea cross the midfield against Arsenal and how motivated and busy will Hazard be in his return. Blues for life. Sincerely, Scott Brandt, Blues supporter from Philly, PA.
Great email, Scott.
Brilliant email. Yes, Dazza, it was a very long email, but it was very, very good. And what I loved about that email most of all, apart from the fact that Jonathan read it so beautifully, is that, you know, it was... As Jonathan Sharp on Mixler, mentioned a minute ago, he's right. I mean, we all know a lot of the boys from the Yanks and the girls from the Yanks, and I'm privileged to know so many of them. I'm privileged to have been out there and watched a lot of games with them on the telly or even in the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. But this was from somebody who's relatively new, who has only just discovered Chelsea and is very, very new to it all. But. What I picked up on with that is that, you know, he's a bit confused by it all, but he clearly has got the most important thing of it, and that is the passion for it. And I think that if he's got that, then he can't go far wrong. Dan Silver, what do you think of that email?
Yeah, I think it's an absolutely fantastic email. I mean, as someone who's been to see American sports events, they do have the passion. It's just a very different passion, because a lot of the American sports are franchised. You can suddenly find your team move from one side of the country to the other. Perhaps the affinity isn't as good as it is with Chelsea, because Chelsea will stay where they are. They might move, you know, a mile down the road. But just, it doesn't matter if you've been a fan for 5 minutes or, you know, 50 years. It's passion, it's enjoyment, it's the yeah. buzz. It's very hard to articulate what it is to be a football fan. I was talking to my wife about the Champions League final, and I just could not articulate what it meant in words. Some things you just can't say. You don't have the words for them. It's just something in your heart that burns and gives you that unbelievable passion. The highs, the lows, the emotion. It's inarticulate sometimes. I can't describe it. It's one of those things we just totally lost for words. It can make your weekend. It can spoil your weekend.
Dan, I can almost see the tears streaming down your face as you give this speech. It's like Martin Luther King, mate. It's wonderful.
Yeah. It's football. I mean, I'm grateful for my dad to take me to Chelsea as a kid.
I love football, Dan. I love football.
Yeah, do you? How work? You're not coming.
Listen. I do. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, I know I very cheekily said that I hate football and I love Chelsea. I mean, a lot of that point is true, but. And I think Jonathan actually made this comment when we were talking about the Arsenal fans earlier on and the new breed of football fan that's ruining the game. The reality is I absolutely love football. Yeah. I grew up with football. I played football every weekend for every year of my school days. And I think a lot of us over here, certainly in England, are very lucky that we've had that experience. But as so many people are saying in Mixer at the moment are also saying, particularly the ones in the States, that they are equally passionate, equally knowledgeable, And in fact, anybody who's watched football in the States or tried to watch Premier League football in the States will know it's exactly Joe the Blue. It's that passion that wakes us up at 4:30 a.m. to watch a rainy night state. It's not easy supporting Chelsea when you're in the States, and the lengths to which they go is quite commendable. Finally, what I would say to Scott is that you live in Philadelphia. Somebody who follows us will know if there's a branch of Chelsea in America in Philadelphia. I'm sure there will be. Get in touch with them, and then you can find out where the local pub is that they gather in, and then you become a True Blue member, become a Chelsea in America member, and then your life will be enriched, my friend. And
Scott,
it's lovely to hear from you, and keep in touch with us. And anything you ever want to know, just email me, and I'll try and fill you in. Dan Levine, have you got anything to add to that?
I think going back to it, first of all, great letter. Secondly, I think there's something special about English football, the sort of the passion and the culture and the traditions that exist, and it's quite unique in the world. And every club has its own different personality, and Chelsea's is by that measure, unique. And one of the things about our personality at our club is that we're very open to people coming in, as long as people are willing to come along and respect that and be a part of it. That's where I think Arsenal have lost it a little bit, in that you've got this new band who've taken over and changed the personality. So people like Scott, is it Scott his name?
Yeah, it is.
When
Scott.
He comes over, he'll be welcomed in, he'll have one of our pubs, and he'll have a great time, I hope.
I think actually, Dan, you've nailed it totally there. You've kind of nailed what we were talking about at the beginning brilliantly. And that is that you're right. We are very welcoming as a club, but you have to get the culture, and the culture is our culture. But whereas at Arsenal, the new breed have come in, and they've kind of ethnically cleansed the original Arsenal fans and invented their own culture, which absolutely stinks.
My Arsenal mate absolutely would agree with that. He despairs of the kind of supporter that sits now around him, who just doesn't understand going on, demands an instant fix, and it's worrying you. As we said earlier, we just hope that doesn't happen when Stamford Bridge, when it becomes a 60,000.
It's a bit of Barcelona syndrome, isn't it? Everyone wants to be Barcelona and just to win beautifully, win week in, week out, and that's just not football. Football is for every Barcelona, you've got a buddy Carlisle United. It's just, it's your team. You've got to get what it is to be your team. Forget about Barcelona. Forget about Madrid. Forget about everybody. It's your team. Yeah. That's all that matters.
Yeah. And as Bob Ousre says on Mixlr, it's tribal. And actually, Mark Barfoot, the lovely Mark Barfoot, has said, of course, the local Chelsea in America group is Philly Blues, Scott. Yeah. So get hold of Philly Blues. They'll be on Twitter or social media, Facebook, that kind of thing. The one thing I would add to that, Scott, because he said that, I mean, I totally understand his zest for winning is everything and bollocks a ticky-tacky football. And I think we would all agree with that. But one thing I would say is that, particularly when you're a Chelsea supporter and you have been for a long time, you completely understand that you cannot win all the time. Hence the wonderful expression, win or lose, up the blues, or win or lose, we're on the booze.
Cheers, just for Scott, if he goes to Twitter, it's @PhillyBlues.
@PhillyBlues. Yeah. Well done, Dan. Okay. All right, chaps. Home straight. Bit of pluggery for the wonderful CFC UK and Supporters Trust, and then we'll be away. But you, of course, can get CFC UK at home games from the CFC UK stall opposite Fulham Broadway Tube, and also at away games. And if you can't get it there, you can always get it digitally by subscribing online at cfcuk.net. And if you're in the USA, follow the Twitter account of @CFCUKUSA. And of course, if anybody's interested in getting a proper hard copy, they're all hardcore copies, CFC UK, but in particular, you can get one from Dan Lundberg on Twitter @DLundberg, LUNDBERG _. And I believe Dan was listening to the show earlier on. So Dan's a regular live Mixlr listener. So you can abuse him and troll him in here. But there you go. What else can I plug? Oh, I know. I'm just going to say I did a very 11th hour article for CFC UK this month, which I had to drink a bottle and a half of red wine before I tucked into it at about 11:30. So I kind of slightly missed the 12 o'clock deadline, but I did get it out. And it's a bit of a strange one from your Uncle Chidge this week, but it's entitled A Nightmare on Stamford Bridge. And it's all about a Guinness and kebab-induced nightmare that I had about Chelsea. I will leave it there. Enjoy it when it comes out before the Milton Keynes game. Right, supporters trust. Don't forget, you lot out there, and this applies to Scots or anybody in the States, anywhere in the world. Join the supporters trust. Get your voice heard by the club. It's £5 to become a voting member, or it's free for non-voting members. And you can sign up at chelseasupporterstrust.com so you can attend the meetings, come to the events and vote on the issues that directly affect you. And make sure you get your voice heard. Follow them on Twitter at ChelseaSTrust. And I can exclusively reveal that there is a new special banner being produced at the moment for the Supporters Trust, which we're going to have at home games. So that'll be cracking when that comes out. Not sure when it will be coming out, but I'll let you know. All righty, we're nearly done. We will be back. We're back on the 1st of February next Monday with a live transfer. No, we won't. We won't even talk about that bollocks. I guarantee it. What we will be doing is we'll be looking back at the game against Franchise FC, also known as Milton Keynes, in the wonderful, fantastic FA Cup. So there we go. And I'll be joined by the ubiquitous Jonathan Kidd.
Hello.
Yes. The lovely Dan Silver and the equally lovely Clayton Bierman. So there we go. Don't forget to follow the show on Twitter at Chelsea Fancast, me at Stanford Chidge, Jonathan at Jonathan Kidd, Dan at Dan Silves 73, and the lovely Dan Levine at Dan Levine. And of course, check out the website, chelseafancast.com. Dan Levine, as always, it's been a wonderful, wonderful pleasure having you on the show.
It's been a pleasure being here, and I hope I've brought something from the old school back to the room by being in a noisy pub with clanking glasses.
You have. I mean, I feel a bit jealous because I should be sitting here with a beer and I'm not. But can you promise me one thing, though, Dan? Can you promise me the next time we have you on the show that you'll be somewhere quiet?
Yes, I promise there will be.
I mean, I readily.
I might even do it from the Emirates.
Yeah, right. That would be great. The sound would be great there because, of course, there'll be nothing to interfere with it. I do readily accept that it was my fault because I just didn't get hold of you quickly enough to tell you we were changing the format. But it'd be lovely to hear you in more effect than we have been able to tonight. So there we go. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Well done, Jason.
Right. Dan Silver,
hello.
It's lovely to have you on the show as always.
Always a pleasure
have
to
you
be
enjoyed
on.
It?
Yeah, always a pleasure to be on.
I know. I missed our pre-match pint or two.
I know.
Tonight.
We'll have to make up for it next time we're in London.
Next match for me is the Man United
game.
I'll
see you there.
I look forward to that. That'll be a cracker, as it always is. Last but by no means least, Mr. Jonathan Kidd, who has spent about £1 million reinvesting in his sound studio so that he can be heard loud and clear tonight. Well done, Jonathan.
Pardon?
Great to have you on, my friend. Have you enjoyed
it? Good fun. Thanks very much. And it works really well, Chidge.
It does, doesn't it? I miss the beer and I miss seeing you all face to face so I can give you... give you kind of real hugs and real.
It's
grief,
when you give us the dirty look. That's the problem.
I know. I miss that, but it's the show must go on, and it's either doing it this way or there will be no show, and that would be tragic, I believe. So there you go. Anyway, it's lovely to have my lovely people in the Skype room with me. It's been very, very lovely having so many of you in Mixlr. So many names I recognise, and I've been lucky enough to have a beer with. I love you all, and I love your interactions. Keep it going. Right. Many thanks to my guests this week. And, of course, thank you all you lot for listening. See you next time. Until then, keep it blue, keep it carefree, and keep it chels.
Up the chels!
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.